Hello and welcome to episode 103 of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Today will be August 6th, 2018 when we release this because we're recording this a little bit early. But I am Rollo McFlugel and I am Rollo McFlugel and that was not me. But with me is Slappy Jones too, and we are both at McFlugel.com. And the show notes page for this episode will be McFlugel.com/103, where you'll find things to, or ways to subscribe to us on the podcast, as well as our email list. And check out LibertyMugs.com, where we got some awesome mugs, including beer mugs now. And so with that, I'm going to hand it over to Slappy Jones 2, who will introduce our episode topic and our burper.
Thank you, Rollo. I'm Slappy Jones, host of the Rollo and Slappy Show. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Today, we're going to talk about kind of redoing, in a sense, an episode we did a couple weeks ago where we were talking about the Joe Rogan experience when he had Dave Rubin on as a guest. And they were talking, Dave Rubin was talking about libertarianism, and Joe Rogan had his issues with it and why it couldn't work. And one of the things he talked about was building codes. And he said, he actually did say this, that the reason the third world has schools falling down and homes falling down is because they don't have the government codes that that we do. And, you know, that's his proof. And Dave Rubin didn't really have a good answer for how the market could handle that. And we thought we did a pretty good job, but someone disagreed. He just whined and moaned. So we have a guest with us today to talk about it, Carr Campit. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. And Slappy, I couldn't help but notice that through that entire segment, you did not actually take credit for the burp during the intro.
What burp?
Oh, you dog.
Yeah, I was going to let you take that fall, but that was me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was trying not to laugh.
I was trying to hold it in, and then it was just coming up, and I just let just came out, and I thought I was hiding it from the mic. And
not the case.
Well, I thought it was Carr because he, right before we started, he said, hold on, I got a burp.
And I tried to get it up at that time. Yeah, I tried to get mine up then.
Yeah.
It didn't come until we
started. I said, I'm about to go on a podcast. I should get this burp out.
I should be professional.
Yeah, I mean, I got my release of gas out before I started recording.
And not during, so.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I've got this. This look, it just gets me all just ready to burp.
Love me some LaCroix.
Great stuff. So when I heard you guys on, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks ago, talking about building codes, I just figured that I wanted to get on and shout about building codes as a civil engineer, pent up frustration over 10 years. And Bird won't let me do that over on my platform. So why not just come here and invade y'all's privacy?
That guy never lets you have any fun.
Oh, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. He rules it like a fascist camp over there.
And then he just goes away and hides.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then I'm out for 2 weeks.
Yeah, he goes into his birdhouse and just does bird things.
Defend our honor, Carr, for 2 weeks. Jeez. Brutal.
So anyway, when we were talking about it, some of the things we brought up, and we don't have to replay the episode, but we were talking about insurance companies kind of stepping in if they're going to be on the hook for repairing the thing. And if you're going to spend a lot of money on it, you want to insure it in case something happens. So, there's some market forces there. There's also a reputation of the builder because the builders want to build the things and they want to sell them. They don't just want to, build a shack. Maybe they do, and it would sell for a lot less money. But what are some of your thoughts on the building codes, how successful they are? Do you have any examples or of your experience as a civil engineer?
Right. Yeah. So, I think like anything, probably a lot of the building codes came out of a good faith effort to try and homogenize our living spaces to some degree. And while I disagree with the way that they went about it, I think you can probably pretty safely extend some benefit of the doubt in terms of benevolence of some of the actors early on. I mean, for example, so one example of a building code is that stepping stairs should be between 4 and 7 inches high, right? if somebody builds a stepping stairs that are 2 inches high or a foot and a half, like it throws everybody off. And like, I, to some degree, I want there to be a little bit of homogeneity with, or consistency with the way stuff is built, and it kind of helps everybody out. But I think that would absolutely solve itself within the free market. Like there's no reason to think that it wouldn't.
Oh, there's so many examples of it already happening with
right.
like material designations and what is SA 516 grade 70. Like the government doesn't decide
everybody
that.
Everybody knows that, yeah. right.
The adoption of the USB cord.
Yes. Sure.
Yeah, exactly. No, and didn't you have a story, or maybe I'm making this up, but when they were building railroads, initially different railroad companies had different size tracks, but they all kind of came, maybe not, but then they came together for the same one so the cars could go on different tracks and they could connect them and do all that thing. Was that your story?
No, I had the railroad story was the boilers blowing up and how the ASMEs got started.
Right.
But no, I think I've heard that story before, and it's just another example. It's like screws and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like people don't want to have to deal with having to...
Screwdriver, screws, all kinds of things. Yeah.
It's a gigantic pain in the ass to not have some consistency, you know, with interplay of parts. Yeah. You know?
Right.
And especially in the living experience of a human being, like if you have a weird shaped doorway, then you've got to go find weird shaped doors if you want to buy a new door. The furniture may not fit like through the door, you know, and blah blah blah. Like people will trend towards kind of a benchmark by which to build their living space.
Yeah, and it makes sense for both sides of the party. Just take like screws for example, with the way the threads are. It makes sense for the people that are buying them because they don't want to have to like, you know, hope that they're getting the, or have to specify that, and it really limits potential manufacturers they can go get for it. Or and on the other side of it, it simplifies the tooling that the manufacturer has. Like if they're having to get a bunch of clients and they want to get as much business as possible, but if they have to keep like changing their tooling up constantly to make different screws for different people, they lose efficiency that way.
Right. Yeah. It starts to cost a lot of people a lot of money if you stray away from some benchmark of consistency, and therefore people will trend towards it.
Right.
You know, but I figured I wanted to lay down at least some, you know, not come in here and just bash everything like I want to.
Oh, that's
but
fine.
I think that like everything, the probably buildings were trending in a certain way. Some interplay of public and private forces, public sees them trending that way and they say, oh, well, we'll hop on. This is a good thing. We'll just make it better. We'll make everybody do it, blah, 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 you know. And I guess I wanted to come on to shed light on exactly how insane all of it is. And it's probably less insane just due to economies of scale on bigger projects and bigger buildings. But for instance, like I've done some really small projects. Right. And, for instance, I'll do a project for, like a mom and pop coffee shop, and, an inspector wants them to add an accessible entryway. And by accessible, I mean, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Americans with Disabilities Act. It was passed in 1990. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's a huge list of ordinances on how to design, a large range of things. But in terms of civil engineering, it comes down to basically, in what I was doing, sidewalks, ramps, landings outside of doorways, handrails and stuff like that, to get pedestrians from, let's say, a parking space into a building. And you go to some small mom and pop coffee shop that's in, like a, you know, an older building and probably barely breaking even. And an inspector comes along and says, hey, we need you to, bring this up to code. We need you to add an accessible entrance for, you know, handicapped people. And that process, so it's dictated down to, as a civil engineer, you need to design, you have maximums for the cross slope of the sidewalk. At every change of direction of the sidewalk, you need what's called a landing, and that can have no less than 2% slope in any direction. you can go to a maximum of 5% running slope in on the sidewalk, unless you have handrails, in which case you can go to 8.33%, but only for 30 feet as a maximum 2.5 foot rise. And then you need a landing. So
really, so what about like neighborhoods that are on a hill?
Right. So it's the other thing that makes a little bit of a difference is if it's considered a public accessible area. So most multifamily complexes will fall under that, and also retail and business, but single family may not.
Multifamily would.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Right. Because they have to provide a certain amount, especially if it's a new build. And again, we're still in the process of grandfathering. So where all the other problem with this, as with everything, is that there's all these gray areas that are very, very difficult to navigate. So, yeah, multifamily is typically, it falls under ADA. Typically there are a couple exceptions, whereas single family may not. And multifamily developments will need to provide a certain number of accessible units on top of the accessibility of the entire site. They'll need to add a certain number of accessible units that are available for rent to the overall count.
So let me make sure I'm understanding this. What you're saying is that you think that handicapped people are lazy and should just walk upstairs.
Well, right. So I actually got into a little discussion, I think with my mom about this a while ago. But in the instance, and this came up in an instance in a coffee shop in our hometown, where they needed to provide an accessible entry. And mind you, they actually had one. They had a ramp, but the ADA actually mandates the material that you're allowed to build it out of to some degree. Again, it's pretty gray, and a lot of manufacturers will say, yeah, ours is ADA compliant, when I don't know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. And they had a wooden ramp, and granted, it was not, you know, it was an old rundown coffee shop, you know, it was right in a building from 30, 40 years ago. And they had they went out and built a ramp at some point. I don't know when it was older. It wasn't like they had just done it, but it allowed wheelchair, you know, folks in wheelchairs to get up it. But it was wood slatted, and it was down on the coast. So like that wood starts rotting.
Rotten right? Away
and quick, as yeah. soon as you start getting like uneven surfaces like that, you're opening yourself up to liability. And so I, you know, what I was saying to my folks was like, you know, there's a way to solve this without force, without like literally threatening this guy's, livelihood. Right. If there's people, you know, this is a super friendly coffee shop. Everybody, you know, can't wait to get there the next morning, you know, to discuss the news. And it's like one of those places. And if there's somebody that needs help up the stairs, people will help them up the stairs. People will fucking carry them up the stairs, you know, if that were needed. And you know, there, and that may not be something that I can take to the court of law and say, look, somebody will carry him up the stairs. I know it sounds a little bit ridiculous, but a voluntary solution is certainly there for anybody that can't get. I can't imagine a business owner seeing somebody outside that's looking longingly up to the second floor window and saying, wow, I wish I could get coffee. Like somebody's going to get that guy in.
Oh yeah. Or even if they don't get him in there, they could just
bring it down.
Yeah. Bring it down. I mean, they're trying to get business and they're trying not to turn people away. And even if they can't,
decent human beings generally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, a lot of businesses, especially something like that, they're not running on huge margins. So, you know, if you force them to build something that they can't afford, you're just sending something to go out of business.
Right.
It's insane.
So then now you brought up that something that they can't afford. And I just wanted to shed light on a little bit how much that would cost. And construction costs aside, if you're going to have something that is publicly accessible like that, you're going to almost guaranteed need a registered engineer. And, you know, registered engineers bill at a pretty high rate for a coffee shop, you know, and you're going to need that registered engineer to design a ramp. Again, adhering to all these codes, that's going to take time, and issue construction documents reviewed and everything. And they may even need to submit it and go through a couple of rounds of submittal and comment process with the local municipality, which can take or a very long time. And typically it's the municipality holding things up and not the engineer, just obviously the nature of public private. And so time, you know, it's cliche, but time is money. It's going to take a very long time. It's not like you can call a contractor or your cousin who's pretty good at woodworking to come out and build a ramp. It's almost guaranteed not going to be technically ADA accessible. And, you know, you're going to have to come get the whole gang involved. And I mean, you're driving the costs so high. And if you imagine that on from the get-go on multifamily projects or commercial projects or anything like that, I mean, the amount of time spent in code compliance from door to door is just staggering.
So this is going to make your head explode out of anger, but yeah. Let me just contrast that. So in order to build a wooden wheelchair accessible ramp that is ADA compliant, you need a registered engineer, a professional engineer, right?
Yep.
So in oil refineries where we're dealing with pressure vessels and everything, according to ASME code, in order to be considered the engineer, you don't even need an engineering degree necessarily. You can have like a certain level of experience. They, in the beginning of the code, they say like, all right, in order to be considered the engineer, because they identify all the roles and responsibilities. And one of it's like, you know, if you're an engineer, if you've got a bachelor's degree, or if you've got like an associate's and whatever, and plus X years of experience in this area, or if you've got no degree and have X number or Y number of years of experience. So it's like, but that's like, because I worked with engineers that didn't go to school for it, but like no one would ever question whether they were an engineer or not.
Right. Because they're doing the work.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is really the important thing.
Yeah. Or, you know, you walk out of school with an engineering degree and I mean, you don't know your ankle from your elbow.
Yeah.
When you're going in, you don't get the magic wand when you get your diploma.
No, that's true. And, you know, the engineering licensure is modeled, or at least it used to be modeled off of that. It was, you could get something like 16 years of experience or 12 years of experience or a associate's and, you know, whatever, 8 years or a bachelor's in four. But they're moving away from that. I think they've shut that down basically in most states. And actually there, I think there's a proposal either in 2020 or 2021 to make it mandatory to have a master's.
Wow.
And that's really crazy. I mean, that's really crazy. You know, you're adding, that's just.
And for what? Because I mean, you can get a master's degree in a lot of different things in engineering or, you know, in any field.
Yeah.
And so it's just, yeah, that's absurd.
It is, man. It is. Because there's, you know, a lot of engineering just frankly isn't like, it's not rocket science, and a lot of people can do it. And you're cutting out so much competition to the field through, I guess you could look at it like regulatory capture, but.
Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny is, you know, everyone thinks, oh, you got to be really great at math to do engineering. And yeah, I mean, it's helpful, but. I took a bunch of semesters of calculus, and actually today, for the first time in my career, I actually needed calculus, like explicitly calculus.
Yeah. What for?
We're putting in a new bottom on a storage tank. Okay. And so you need to fill,
filling it up.
With concrete between the old and the new bottom. And so it's like the middle of the floor of the bottom is raised from all the edges around the perimeter.
Okay.
So it forms like a cone on top of the cylinder. Okay. Yeah. So we needed to estimate how much concrete there would be.
Right.
So the cylinder is easy. The cone, you need calculus to do it.
Yeah.
And then once I realized that, I was like, ugh, all right, let's just estimate it as half the cylinder would be.
Yes.
And we'll just add a, you know, an adder or deductor for the contractor they use more or less.
Yeah.
So I didn't actually, we just
fudged the number. So you dodged it.
Yeah, we just fudged the number. Yeah. We rounded it and estimated.
I almost had these calculus there. Yeah. That is engineering in real life. It's like, man, just dodged the bullet there. Almost had these
count. it's amazing. You know, most of the stuff, if there's
99% of the time.
There's some simple calculations we'll do, but a lot of times just plug it into a computer program. And the value of I mean, you can't just throw numbers into software, get an answer, and then say like, this is what I'm going with.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to know exactly what the calculations are doing. You just have to understand what the parameters you're inputting, how right. that would affect the outcome.
Yeah.
So you just have to have like that basic knowledge of what's going on, which you don't learn in the classroom. I guess you learn some of the stuff. I mean, you learn basic things about it, but once you're in the working world, you're not just dealing with like very simple, like, so you've got energy in plus energy or equals energy losses from friction plus energy out or whatever that, you know, the conservation of energy equation is, which I can't, you know, it's a lot more specialized than that. And you only learn it by doing it a bunch of times.
Exactly. Like, I mean, that's most engineering is just having a feel for the numbers. So mm-hmm. like if I were to like look at something, plug in to a computer program, how long, or an Excel spreadsheet or something like that, how long a ramp I need, for example, to get 1 foot down vertically at 8.33%. And I come out with something like 17 miles. I need to be like, well, let's not build a 17 mile ramp. Like, let's right. revisit this because this doesn't make sense.
You know? Yeah. So where do they come up with the 8.33 number?
It's a foot per 12. So one divided by 12.
Is that just arbitrary or is there some like...
Yeah, more or less. I there may be some study some behind reason. It.
Yeah.
And when I was saying the cross slope is 2%, it's actually 2.08. So it's like, I think that's an inch per... What was that? A quarter inch per foot or something? Half inch per foot? Quarter inch per foot?
Oh, because it's probably 1/12.
Right. So okay. Yeah. So.
But not quite.
Well, right, yeah. So the longitudinal, the running slope of a ramp can be up to 1 foot and 12 feet, 1 foot up to 12 feet long. The cross slope of any surface that's accessible can't be more than a quarter inch per foot, quarter inch vertically per foot. So that comes out to 2.08%, or just most people just round it to 2.
Yeah, and that's funny too, because if it is supposed to be 1/12, but they make it 0.08, I mean, it just shows that they're just willing to chop off numbers.
Well,
which is
kind of, but most people round down because you got to remember that you're handing this off to people to build in the field. So so it's got to be a maximum of 2%. So I actually usually design to 1.5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you throw factors of safety in and that, but I'm just saying that it shows an arbitrariness of
for
that
sure.
though. Of what the actual number is. And if you don't get that number right, then you're in violation and you're subject to, you know, fines or whatever. It's
Yeah, man. And I mean, more really the problem, the real problem is that it's not that you're worried about the government finding you typically. You're just going to get sued. Somebody's going to trip and there's going to be a lawyer out there looking at the sidewalk. And if there's one lip like of concrete up over, you know, on the paneling, or if there's, you know, if any bit of it's over 2%, they'll be out there with their smart level, like looking at all the cross slopes, the longitudinal slopes, the widths. I mean, the sidewalks have to be certain widths in certain places and can only be necked down to so much for so long, and yep, blah blah blah. They're gonna go up and down that place, and you're gonna get sued. And if that person fell and broke their neck, like, I mean, you know, I don't want to minimize the fact that somebody fell and broke their neck, but at the same time, like, you know.
Yeah, there's a difference between if your slope was off by 0.01% versus that you, I don't know,
yeah,
did something egregious.
Oh, yeah. If you have neglected to maintain your wooden front porch and somebody falls through for, down a level and breaks both their legs, like, yeah, you...
Yeah, you deserve
like,
to be sued.
You need to...
Be responsible, yeah.
Right. But, I mean, if there's natural settling of concrete that causes... Yes, man, that seems lousy. So...
Yeah. And it just... What's frustrating is that everyone says like, oh, how would this stuff get developed without the I mean, we, you know, you're acknowledging that you need something, you need some sort of standard and some sort of maintainability. But if you look at something like the, I assume you did a lot with NFPA.
Yeah, but a lot less because that would fall mostly under the architects.
Okay. But that was a private organ, and a lot of the NFPA stuff, you know, now gets codified into law or whatever, but that started out as a private organization.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it was, they were, you know, factories and stuff were burning down, and they said, well, this kind of is terrible that we're losing factories and all of our capital equipment, so we have to rebuild it and spend all that money. So believe it or not, this was based on the idea that the broken window fallacy is not true. So in order to make sure that they didn't have to keep rebuilding factories because they were burning down, they came up with like this set of rules that if you followed this, that you wouldn't have these issues. You wouldn't burn your building down. And so insurance companies, of course, jumped all over it. Banks, you know, jumped all over it, and it benefits everyone.
Right.
So right. it just goes to show that there's, you know, there's an incentive to not hurt your customers, hurt your employees, have your buildings falling down because you've got to rebuild it. I mean, it's.
Well, I know we're talking about building codes, but with the ADA, I could hear an objection being, well, there's not that many people in wheelchairs or walkers or whatever. Why would a business think it's worth it to, you know, spend money or hire an engineer or whatever, or hire their cousin to do it, if they're really not going to lose that many customers from it? Do you think there's an answer to that in the market?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think social pressures would push them in that direction. And then I think that it's not just like, I think there's a continuum, right? Like, I don't think it's just handicapped people and non-handicapped people. I mean, there's a lot of people, like I have bad knees. Like if there's a coffee shop on top of five stories of just rickety stairs, I'm probably not going to the coffee shop. Like there's a continuum, and you probably as a business owner want to make it as easy as possible for people to come into your store.
Oh, well, just older people have trouble climbing stairs.
Lazy people.
Yeah.
Like, you know, anybody, just anybody. Like you have every incentive to make it as easy as possible for people to get inside your store. Mm-hmm. That's why Amazon exists, because it's as easy as possible to get something delivered to your house. It's so easy, in fact, that you don't even have to leave your house. Like there is a desire of people to not have to work very hard to get what they want.
And two, if like we mentioned earlier, maybe this isn't the greatest example, but or the most realistic example, but it drives the point home, was that if you had someone that was, you know, every day they had to run the coffee out to the person a few times or carry them in. So they're spending the time to do that, and they might be happy to do it. But if they decide, hey, my time might be better spent in the coffee shop as opposed to running outside to deliver this coffee, maybe it is worth the money to throw a ramp up so this guy can just come right in, and maybe I get some more customers out of it too by people in wheelchairs that could just kind of roll by because they don't even think that I'll get this delivered to me. So there could be, you know, just straight up market incentives.
Sure. Oh,
just business, because we're saying it's all market incentives. But I think, you know, people.
And I mean, not to mention, like, if you take away all the regulations that you have to meet, that business owner is going to probably come up. I mean, business owner is probably a pretty level-headed dude. And he's probably going to come up with a ramp design. I mean, a ramp is the most simple thing there is.
It's one of the simple machines.
It's a simple machine. It's an incline plane. Like this isn't rocket science. Guy can go out there and build a ramp in a few days and a few hundred dollars, maybe $1,000, $2,000. You know, that may be a portion of the design fee for the civil engineer, not to mention everybody else and actually constructing it, right? And under a regulated system. So, and as we always say, it's always as compared to what, and trusting that business owners are going to try to get people into their store, I think is a better system as compared to blindly enforcing crazy codes on business owners who are trying to serve their community based on just outlandish design standards.
Right. And you would expect that a business owner, like you said, would be savvy because that's how they have kind of the market power to begin with, because they tend to make good decisions. They tend to manage their business well. And so that that falls into that too. There's no reason it wouldn't.
And I also think going back to the insurance world with liability, and most businesses want to be protected against liability. If someone gets hurt on the property, and if there's something dangerous, an insurance company is going to say, we're not going to cover you for that, because, you know, it's like insuring a house that's on fire. Like, this is an accident waiting to happen. Either fix it or we're not going to insure you.
Yeah. I mean, this is, we haven't even talked about the fact that without any of these regulations in some sort of free market judicial system, the complainant who has injured themselves could absolutely still take this to court, but then you have your community deciding rather than bureaucrats and some foreign place deciding. You have your community saying, holy moly, like Joe just fell through a freaking wooden deck versus, Matthew just tripped over a tiny concrete lip because the concrete settled.
Yeah.
You know,
and we know that Matthew's a jerk and makes a big deal about this stuff.
Right. And so Matthew has a history of this stuff, whereas as Joe's been potentially an upstanding member of society and maybe he was a jerk too. I don't know, who cares, but like, it would be very, very obvious that, without going down that whole, to your point, Rollo, is that, if you have some kind of reputation in the community of being a reasonable human being, as you would be incentivized to do in a free market, then you would be probably more inclined to get a jury to say, look, this guy's like real stand up and he says that he tripped over this thing and it shouldn't have been there and blah, 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 at least hear him out rather than dismissing it out of hand.
Right.
So.
Yeah, it's one of those things that people just assume it because it's not in their, I mean, if you weren't a libertarian or an anarchist and you didn't work in this field, you probably would just take it for granted that, I guess that makes sense. Like we all do. Right. We only see it. I mean, that's what I try to tell people is that I'll tell them about regulations and stuff, public or government versus private in my field of work, because that's where my expertise is, and I can speak a lot to it because I deal with it day in and day out. And so that's why I tell people, it's like, all right, this may sound like, wow, this is pretty crazy. But it's like, all right, well, just look in your own place that you work, your own expertise, and think about all the stupid rules that you have to comply with versus how you would act, how your industry would act without all that, or how they do. Anyway, even with the government imposing all these rules, because one problem that I think that a major problem that we deal with, and this is inclusive of a lot of libertarians, is that we tend to give the government a lot more credit than it deserves. Is that people think that there's a lot of the way the world works is because the government has these rules and regulations, when a lot of it is they're just kind of sitting there hanging around. While these industries take care of themselves, because there's no way, it's not practical at all for a central body to understand these industries and make all the rules for them. It's just impossible. It's insane to think that they
would. It is. It's crazy to think that they could.
A point on that, in my industry, in the life insurance industry, way back in the day, there was no law for an incontestable period, which is when you take out life insurance, the insurance company has 2 years to contest any claims in that. If it goes beyond 2 years, they can no longer contest it. The contract is valid. It's good. And the industry already set the standard before. Now, like right now, it's a law. There has to be a 2-year contestability period. It can't be shorter than 2 years, or can't be longer than 2 years. But before it was ever a law, the industry did it anyway. And the reason they did it is because they want people to buy the insurance. And if you're concerned that you may have, smoked a cigarette at a party and you didn't tell the insurance company because it was just one cigarette and you got non-smoker rates and you're worried that 10 years down the road when it's time to make a claim, the insurance company is going to start interviewing people and someone will say, oh, yeah, I remember he smoked a cigarette with me. And then that voids the contract. So the insurance companies wanted people to trust them. So they already put these incontestable periods in the contracts before it was ever law. And there's examples, countless examples of this in the insurance industry and probably in every industry. But those are things that when I talk to mostly normal people who don't think about these things, they would say a company would never do that because all a company wants to do is take your money and screw you. But there's just countless examples of that not happening in the real world.
Right. Because, I mean, like you said, I mean, the companies need to incentivize people to use their services versus the other guy.
Right. And it's a really nice thing for a company to say, you know, not that they're expecting liars or fraud, but to say after 2 years, we're not going to contest it. We're going to count it as a good contract. That gives the person buying it a little more peace of mind or ease to say, when I do pass away, my beneficiaries will get the money. It won't be held up forever as they investigate to check every statement I made on the application.
Right, right, right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and that's like, like anything, you know, I mean, reputable companies issue warranties on their, on
right,
their
all the time.
And where if the free market was as vicious greedy, I guess is the token word, as the left would have you think, then every company is out to just sell you junk and then not back it up. Whereas that just absolutely isn't the case. There's no law that you have to issue a warranty on stuff, but people do. And you know what? They eat some money on it. Well, I think overall they win, you know, I mean, it's because they sell more units based on the fact that people will trust them and, you know, chase that down. But yeah, I mean, they're eating money on warranty items. You know, everybody listening to this has probably had something fixed on their car mm-hmm. or on an appliance, you know, something, whatever you own, I bet most people have exercised a warranty and, you know, there was nobody forcing them to do that, but you develop a reputation and that's what keeps you in business.
Now, I remember when I bought my first car right out of college, it was a new Saturn.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, man. And I had it for like 2 weeks and the passenger side mirror fell off.
Man, they don't make them like they used to.
And I don't know how. I honestly have no idea. I mean, it didn't get hit. It was just dangling because it's, you know, electronics. So there's a wire in there. It was dangling off the side of my car. So I took it back to the dealer and they probably thought I did something stupid or I hit it, whatever. And I was telling them, like, I have no idea what happened. I'm just driving and the thing fell off.
Did you have a baseball bat in your hand while you were talking?
Yeah. I did, yeah. And the guy I'm talking to, he's like, I don't think this is under warranty, you know? And then like somebody, you know, the manager came out or whatever. He's like, just fix it, put a new one on, no problem. And they fixed it, no charge, put a new mirror on. And I'm guessing because it was a brand new customer, I just bought the car, they want to keep you happy, they want you to come back. And then, of course, Saturn disappeared a couple years later.
Yeah, they went out of business.
Because of all the mirrors falling off the car.
Because of all the mirrors. But it's just one, what you were saying, everyone has a story. That's the one that came to mind.
Well, it's like try to return something on Amazon.
Oh,
they take it back without any questions asked. And a lot of times they'll pay for shipping.
Yep. I exercised that once. Actually, one time I had it, they shipped it to my house, and this was a few years ago, and it never showed up. And I'm sure somebody's just stole it off the porch. And so I remember thinking this is a relatively expensive item, not super, like 60 or 80 bucks, and thinking like this is going to be a hassle and I probably won't get any money for it. I talked to Amazon and they just shipped another one. They're like, it's just not even worth.
Yeah.
I mean, if I spend an hour on the phone with this guy, it's already not worth, you know, it's just, they just shipped me another one and I got it and it was fine.
Well, it's like I remember my mom had to return something on Amazon. It came back like slightly broken, or it came out like slightly broken. And she called up and she was expecting like the fist fight and try to prove that it was, you know, she didn't break it. It came that way. And she was just like, got off the phone and was like, I can't believe it. I, you know, didn't really have to explain what was wrong. They said they're going to ship another one at no charge. And I said, all right, well, how do I ship this back to you? And they said, oh, just keep it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, because and you know, to circle back, I'm sure that Amazon has a database. Well, I'm sure they have a database with probably a little bit more information than I'd like, but just speaking of above board information, they probably have a database of everything that I've ordered because I can go access it. Mm-hmm. And they probably have a database saying that this guy's only called up and bitched at us once. And, you know, like your example with Joe and Matthew outside the coffee shop and whichever one it was, taking their complaint to court and being an upstanding member of the community, and everybody knows that he doesn't raise a fuss over nothing. Like Amazon, you know, if somebody develops a pattern of saying every single package that's shipped gets stolen, well, yeah, that's going to raise a red flag and maybe you're going to have some trouble. But, that's not something that I ever done. And I'm sure they just look, you know, they probably pulled up something real quick. And they're like, okay, this guy's like just a dude and he just got screwed somehow. I'm like, just ship him a new one, you know? Yep. And so like, it keeps everybody in check. It keeps the consumer in check for not trying to, you know, exercise fraud. And it also keeps the businesses in check for, you know, again, not exercising fraud, I guess.
Yeah. And to go back to a few minutes ago, I forget what exactly was said, but just how I think you were saying, Carr, about how the government adopts things like later on.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's so true. The government is such a lagging indicator of where a market or industry or public opinion is. Maybe a great example of that is Barack Obama. The candidate Barack Obama was against gay marriage. Later on as president, when no one cared about that issue anymore, he's like, oh yeah, I'm in favor of gay marriage now.
Right. Yeah.
And they all do that kind of stuff. It's totally, it's the way it is. It's they always take something, the market changes, and then they make these laws to enforce it when everybody has already done it anyway. And then they take credit for it. It's like OSHA's another example. Not that they don't impose bad laws and regulations that harm businesses. They do that all the time too. But OSHA is a great example, is that they love to show this chart of the year. It was like 1970s, early 70s, I think, that OSHA came into existence. They show this chart from that first year that OSHA started, and then it's a nice downward sloping curve to show the workplace injury rate. They say, hey, this is proof that OSHA has a major effect on workplace safety. But, you know, any reasonable person who's thinking should ask, well, what did the chart look like before that OSHA got put in? Was it
going up?
Yeah. Was it level flat, was it plateau? Yeah. And what do you know, if you bring that chart back, it was already on that same trend.
Yeah. Right. Right.
So it's like,
well, I mean, a very real world example. Have you ever been in a building that was built in 1989? Would you say, wow, thing, and then walk across the street to a building that was built in 1990 after ADA and be like, whoa, thank God. Thank God I'm over here. Like, right. You wouldn't even notice, you know?
Yep.
And because people wanted to make things as attractive and reasonable to the eye, the human eye, as possible in order to, you know, bring them into business or into whatever they're building. And then again, the lagging indicator of government came in now. And I'll even say this, like, geez, man, like there's a lot of places you can go. You ever been to like London or something like that? Like all those places are like so old. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the cobblestone's a pain in the ass. And I get where that can be tough. But it's not like you have to climb over monkey bars to get anywhere. Right. It's all fairly reasonable because, again, humans tend not to want to have to work to get to where they're going.
Exactly. Exactly. So. Yeah. It's, I don't know if there was much less, I think we're going on a good 45 minutes at this point.
Wow. That time flew.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you have any more building code stories, nightmares, government coming in, telling you to do things?
Oh, I mean, I've
probably got countless.
Yeah. I don't even want to get into it, man. Cause we'll just go.
Yeah. I can't believe it's been 45 minutes. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming on. There's a, you know, I think it's important to have a civil engineer to talk about this.
Sorry to cut you off, Raul.
Yeah, I think it's important to have a civil engineer to talk about this kind of stuff after, you know, it was on the Joe Rogan and Dave Rubin podcast, because, it shows that if a civil engineer can understand this stuff and accept that the market can handle this, then anybody can. Anybody can. I mean, it's for, you know, I know for someone like a tractor aficionado for saying that, like, well, he's very, you know, astute and highfalutin that, you know, we expect great things from someone like that. But
what's so civil about engineering anyway?
Just that one major. And you know what? You got to give me credit though, Carr, because when I asked about the NFPA,
yeah,
and you said that was architects handled that mostly, yeah. I think I bit my tongue off.
Did you?
You know, I always wanted to pretend to be an architect.
Was that Seinfeld?
Yeah.
Or Vandalay?
Yeah. Yeah, that was, yeah, Vandalay Industries, right?
Yep.
Latex manufacturer? or was that the marine biologist? You told her I was a marine biologist?
Yeah. That's what it was, I think.
Yeah.
It's always tough to remember exactly which story thread goes where.
Yeah, I know.
I'm glad this Seinfeld episode or reference got noticed.
Yeah, it didn't go over my head.
Oh, yeah. What did you miss the other day?
It was our 100th episode. Mike Tron, why is insurance...
Risk management.
That's right. And I didn't pick that up either. Yeah.
I still thought... I had no idea, but I still thought it was funny.
I thought it was funny, but yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. Cool. Yeah, Slappy, do you have something that you were going to say before we...
Nah, I got nothing.
Yeah, all right.
Do you have a free market story, Rala?
I do. Last week at the end of the show, we said, hey, if you go on our website, you'll notice that the website is faster. I wish I could take... Because, yeah, our website was slow for a while, and it was annoying. I didn't like it. But I kind of reached my... the top of my abilities of what I could do to try to fix it, because I'm not really that technical when it comes to any sort of web development or that. I can, you know, I know enough to get a website up and put a podcast up but for actually like going behind the curtains and everything and getting under the hood, I'm very limited. But went to Fiverr.com and did, you know, a little keyword search, make WordPress sites faster, and found a guy who was very highly rated, charged a very reasonable amount of money, hired him, and within 2 days he did the work. You know, emailed back and said, hey, check it out, see what you think, and thought he did a great job. The website's pretty fast now, on both mobile and desktop. So it looked like gathering, just kind of quickly looking at what he did, it looked like he just added a few plugins. And people might say, man, he charged you money to just put in plugins that you could have done. It's like, yeah, maybe. But I mean, I did a pretty good search online of how to do this stuff, and I didn't come across these plugins that he did. So I mean, I'm still happy with it. I don't really care how he did it. Other than the fact that he did do it, and I was okay with the price he charged. So I think it's a great thing. I think it's a great thing that you can specialize and you know, send someone a little bit of money to solve a problem for you. And that's the way that economies grow, is that people solve problems. And that's always the way it happens. And that's how, you know, as we get more complex with economies, we have different problems. And so the better you are at solving problems, the more money you're able to make and the better that you're able to make the world. So it's a little thing, but it shows it's a microcosm for how the world works.
Tractors.
I said tractors already.
Okay.
Man, I mean... You don't think I have this locked down?
No.
Yeah, it's true. Not. I fly by the seat of my pants on everything. So, again, show notes page is show notes page is mcflugel.com/103. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and YouTube, as well as if checking out there, you can subscribe to the email newsletter, where you will get a discount on at libertymugs.com. And if you sign up on the affiliate link on the show notes page to the Tom Woods Liberty Classroom, we will send you a free Liberty mug. That is a coffee mug of either size or a beer mug. And we have started selling beer mugs. They're pretty awesome. We'll be adding more to them. If you have one that's a coffee mug but would like as a beer mug, let us know and we'll do that for you so we can get that up. That helps us out to figure out which ones to do first, because it is a little bit more work to get the beer mugs up. What else am I missing? I don't know. Carr, what do you have to plug? What's going on with the Friends Against Government podcast, other than Bird is just like on a sabbatical?
Yeah, Bird's on a sabbatical. We just released an episode today. I guess it'd be a few days ago by this time, but with everybody's favorite Aaron, Kid Codpiece came on and talked about cryptids with us.
It was good.
Yeah. Oh, you guys. I had so much fun recording that. Dude, Aaron's the man. I really like talking with Aaron. He's just incredible. The guy gets the flow and also just can dish as well as he can take, which is fantastic. Yeah,
works really well.
So we've got that, and we've got another interesting one. Actually, it'll be next week. We're releasing one that we had J.W. Weatherman, who was on this show, is coming on ours. So we've already recorded it, and we're releasing it, I think, next week.
Nice.
Find me on Twitter at CarCampit, and I'll plug Bird Arcist on Twitter, Friends Against Government podcast, and I'm on Steam at Voluntary Mess.
That is perfect name for you.
Yeah. And I guess.
Oh, I guess now I never mind. Now, makes sense in a couple of ways.
Yeah. I think. Yep.
That's all I'll say.
I'm on Minds. If anybody's doing the Minds thing, I'm starting to get a little bit more active over there. I just have the same handle, Car Campit, over there.
Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, we're on Minds too.
Yes.
Yep.
Same names, yep. I think.
Yeah.
Our friends podcast and stuff. So we've got the aforementioned Friends Against Government podcast. We've got Mance Rader's Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast. We have Jeremiah Harding, Dino Files, Peaceful Treason podcast. And am I missing anyone?
We got Harding. We got Friends Against Government. We got.
If we forgot someone, they should make themselves more memorable for us.
There you go.
It's their fault.
Nice. Well, thanks for having me on, guys.
Ah, thank you. I think you've cemented. You're pulling away in the lead of most.
Is this number four?
I think this is number four. Yeah. Well, no, because I think one of those maybe y'all came on ours or something.
Well, no, you were on the.
You were on before Bird ever came on,
and then
I was on about talking about America. I was on. Talking about the building codes now, and I was talking about the
100th episode.
100th, right?
And then you guys were on another time. The two of you, so this would be four.
Yeah. Are you sure that y'all weren't on ours?
We were, but after we were on yours, you came on ours.
Yeah, we did our home and home.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're right. Damn, yeah, four.
Cool. So now you're officially ahead of Vivek.
Good, where I like to be.
All right. Again, show notes page is mcflugel.com/103, and make sure to check out Car Campit stuff and Bird Arcus stuff, especially the Free Man Beyond check out the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast, but check out Friends Against Government podcast. If you're not listening to that, you are missing out. It is I stop everything when that comes out Wednesday afternoon. No matter what else happens, I don't stop everything because I wait until I drive home from work that day. But whatever else I'm listening to, that gets put on hold to listen to the Friends Against Government. So,
thanks, Rolla.
Absolutely. So, thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week.
Peace.